Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey guys, welcome back to Soul Sisters. We are here at the Chord Club, me and my favorite co-host of all time.
Yay. Hey, Jesse.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. It's a Saturday, which is an unusual day for us to record.
Never get this luxury.
No, it feels a little looser. It's nice.
Yeah, it feels like
there's no clock ticking.
Yeah.
But we came in today because we had the lucky opportunity of snagging Rumor Willis, who is in town very briefly for her stint at the Cafe Carlisle. She lives in LA, but she's here performing for a few nights this week. And we saw her sing, and she was amazing.
She was amazing.
And we accosted her at the bar afterwards, mm-hmm. and we said, we host a podcast that you should be on.
It's called Soul Sisters. You should be on it.
Yeah. And she humored us and said, yeah, sure. And then we followed up, and it actually happened. So,
yeah.
Lesson to you,
great
kids.
Great day. Yeah, go
Never
for it.
Never be afraid.
That's the lesson.
What's the worst that can happen?
Right.
They don't come to your podcast.
The worst that can happen is nothing.
The worst that could happen is you spend all of Saturday in bed.
Right. Or is that the best thing? No, I don't know.
Yeah,
no, but it's...
It was a win-win situation.
It was wonderful, and her friend Ty is wonderful, and they just made it happen. So it was a great conversation.
It was. So, yeah.
I could go on about the feelings that we both had from watching her perform. We were on the side, and from watching videos today, I was like, oh man, I wish we had a better view because she's just a wonderful performer. But we had...
We're complaining about our seats at the Carlisle.
Not complaining.
This is where we've come in our life.
This is the pinnacle.
It's
a very fortunate thing. It was like, it's the best New York night out, but no.
We got super profile.
You got super profile, and yet we were still bowled over.
Exactly.
Totally over, so.
She's amazing.
She's
from
amazing.
Any part of the room that you sit in.
Yeah.
So she popped in and she talked to us about that and her whole life growing up with her parentals, who you may know are Bruce Willis and Demi Moore, and what it was like being in that kind of household and dealing with all the attention that brought. And she still has managed to become a super cool,
super down to earth, super cool.
Yeah, human being.
Yeah.
Who has an amazing voice. So let's get to our chat with Rumor Willis.
Let's do it.
Talk, start us off.
I can't believe that this is happening because we had the privilege of coming to the show.
At the Carlisle. The prestigious Cafe Carlisle on New York's Upper East Side.
Right.
Famed room.
Delightful night out that you can think of. It's such a New York night.
Uh-huh.
And Jesse invited me to come. And I'm, of course, going to say yes because it's so wonderful. But I didn't know, and I knew who you were, but I didn't know, I didn't look you up much. So I went in kind of blind.
Cold.
Yeah.
That's the best way
Which
to do
is
it.
The best way, and that's so unusual now to like not, it's like so easy and tempting to always know everything about everything.
Totally.
You know, it's like it would have taken a click for me to be like, oh, that's her music, that's her mm-hmm. vibe, like anything. But I'm so glad I didn't because we get there and it's like, you know, it's a tiny room. It's a small, intimate, legendary cabaret room, which we adore that vibe. But it's like, all right, show me what you got. It's like,
yeah.
And you won
and
us
you did.
Both over. We were just totally enchanted the entire time. And that's like not an easy thing to do. So
yeah.
It was like,
we thought you probably wouldn't have time to come in here while you were in New York,
right.
But I remember leaning over to you and being like, two bags, I feel like we'd have fun together.
Oh man. Yeah, no,
like, I think so we'd have a good time with Rumor if she had time.
Right. Yeah. By then we're like, all right, we're going to just go over to her and make this happen because this is like too good. And like from your voice to your stage presence and your sincerity and like everything about your performance was just like, really winning. So, happy to have you here.
Thank you.
Congrats.
I'm so stoked to be here.
And the New York Times review. Holy
shit.
Oh my
God. Yeah. It's pretty awesome, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
So
great.
I was stoked. I had no idea and would never in a million years have thought that, you know, that kind of would have come out of that. I was telling my roommate Ty that I'm used to playing in clubs maybe at night where, you know, half the people are listening and then the other half are either drunk or maybe trying to hand you shots while you're singing.
And yeah. Because like, you did Sayers Club jazz. For a yeah, while, right?
Totally.
In LA. Yeah, that's a very different
vibe.
Very
different, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's fun and it's, you know, it's very kind of raucous and awesome. But
yeah, that's like a club night out. Like clubbing.
It's
club.
Definitely
and
a little
it's
bit
it's
different.
Like a rock club. I don't know it so much. Is it like...
Yeah, I mean, most of the... I always tried to, you know, play more jazz songs and people would kind of just look at you like, what are you doing?
Like, pick it
yeah,
up.
Let's
pick
go.
It
come on, come on. And, you know, I would try to start the show maybe around 10 and, you know, people wouldn't even end up getting there until midnight. And so by that time, people are just having a good time.
That's a long show, though.
Yeah.
So on music.
Well, no, we would
do like two sets.
I would try to start at 10, but then we would just wait for people to come in and actually get in there. And so, you know, everyone likes to be fashionably late.
Sure.
So we wouldn't start until midnight. And then it's maybe, you know, like 1 or 1:30. I'm like, man, I got to wake up tomorrow. I got to work. I got to do stuff.
So this was like a couple years ago already now.
Yeah.
That it was a residency basically you did for a couple years.
It's fun though. I think I might actually try and start it back up again when I get to LA and hopefully try and do the earlier crowd and see if I can make it work.
Now I saw you do the Baz Luhrmann show at Rockwell.
Oh man, that's
so when
cool.
I discovered you could sing. Because someone invited me to that and I was like, what? I don't know. I liked Romeo and Juliet, but I don't understand what the show is going to be. And then it was like a mashup of all songs from his movies and you were so good. And I was like,
Thank you.
It's so nice that I can go back to work tomorrow and be like, she was good.
Right, that's
she's
always the reason.
That's
like,
such a.
You went to a show and she was
like actually great. You know, it's like that's a pleasant surprise. A lot of times,
it's like when I take people to your shows and they're like, they're actually good.
It's like my friend
I
has
can
a
talk
band.
To her.
Aww.
Yeah, like, thanks guys.
Yeah, right.
Okay. It was a big relief.
What is this Baz Luhrmann thing again? We talked about it briefly, but it sounds so cool.
Yeah, Rumor, I'll let you describe it.
Yeah, basically, I was with kind of this company called For the Record, and we would take different directors and then take some of their movies and put the scenes from the movies and then the songs from the soundtrack and kind of almost tell a story, but it would flip-flop between scenes. And so we did, I think, Baz Luhrmann, Tarantino, John Hughes, and then before that, I think that they had done like Zemeckis and a couple of different other people. It was really cool.
In one show, combine all of those directors and their music?
No, just one.
One director per show.
Yeah, and then we
from
would
all
that.
Different movies.
Yeah.
So it would be like, would there be acting it out, or was it just?
Oh, totally.
Singing?
We would do the songs. You
it's
know,
like
or
dinner theater.
Yeah, we,
oh
exactly. God. We would do the scenes from the movies.
This is like the greatest.
It was pretty awesome.
Thing, yeah.
I'm actually doing something like that when I get home. It's not with the same company, but Ty, my best friend and my roommate, is actually directing it, and it's the unauthorized musical parody of The Devil Wears Prada.
Oh my God.
It's really epic.
Yes.
I went and saw it. I've seen it a bunch of times now. It's so funny and so brilliant. And
wait, did he write the music?
We took songs from, you know, either songs that kind of play in a funny way to the scenes or, you know, just different things to kind of really put it together. Some of the songs are from the soundtrack and some of them aren't. It's just, it's so funny and hilarious. And
are you
awesome.
The Anne Hathaway?
Yeah. I was gunning for the Meryl Streep role, but, you know.
Not yet.
Yeah, I got time.
Yeah. Got to age into that one a little
bit.
Yeah.
So home is LA for you.
Yeah. I mean, although I keep finding myself back in New York within the past 2 years, so... I kind of like the balance. I feel like I'm here just
that's
enough
good.
So where I can get the kind of New York vibes and then I get to go home.
Mm-hmm. Right, totally. That's awesome. The dream. That's my dream. Someday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially on days like today.
Yeah, it's pretty cold
it's
out there.
Pretty gross.
Yeah, it's pretty New York today.
But you're here for this show and then doing other things also, or is it mainly the Carlisle?
I was mostly just for this show and then... Funny enough, I ended up just meeting a couple people and talking to friends that I might come back out at some point and do different shows around the city. But I gotta come home. I think I've been away for about a month now, so I'm ready to go home and be in my own bed, yeah. See my dogs.
Yeah. Oh. So you're recording an album now too, right?
Yeah, with Linda Perry.
Very cool.
She's amazing.
So where in the process are you with that?
We started, I would say, maybe a year and a half ago, and we're just kind of throwing things together, and then right in the middle of us kind of recording, we had a couple songs. I got Dancing with the Stars, and so I mean, after
you
that,
got a little busy.
Yeah, my life kind of, you know, took control at that point, and then I ended up coming here to do Chicago, and so it's kind of been a whirlwind. I haven't really had time to go back in and write again, but I'm hoping that this year I'll have a little bit more time to get back in there and really focus on music.
Yeah,
so much stuff, so many things.
How is she?
She's incredible. You know, it's so funny. Everyone always, you know, asks. She's says like, oh, she's so intimidating, and is she really hardcore? And for me, I guess I maybe have had a different experience. I don't know. I just think that she's one of those people that's so incredibly talented, not just in her own right as a musician, but the way that she writes music and the way that she writes songs and the way that she works with whoever, you know, the musician that she's working with. She has this kind of incredible ability to really keep you honest in your music and pull out incredible things. I mean, I remember being in the studio one day and she had just played a little something on the piano, and we both kind of looked at each other and we're like, that's cool. And then she just said, all right, well, just start singing, just, you know, whatever comes to your mind. And we ended up writing, you know, one of my favorite songs. And it's a very kind of almost cathartic thing for whatever you're kind of going through. Even if you go back and then end up changing stuff or reworking it. It's a really cool experience to work with her.
That's awesome. I used to live in West Hollywood, and I would see her and Sarah Gilbert around a lot. And I would just always watch them. Like, they look like the coolest couple. I just want to go over like, hey, neighbors.
Yeah,
but
man,
I just always creeped on them from afar. So is that all original material that you guys are doing in that album? Okay.
Yeah, wow. I mean, I'd love at some point, I think, to do an album with maybe a couple covers on it or something like that, just because I think it's a cool way to kind of show and pay homage to, you know, the people that inspired you and the people that you like.
Yeah, like your set at the Carlisle.
Right. Very much
which
so,
which is a
very
eclectic mix, but somehow all fit together at the same time.
I want to sort of build up to how did that happen, since that's sort of where we're at.
Are you taking us back?
I know, I'm curious.
I've been dwelling too much in now. Take us back.
You were born in Kentucky.
I was.
So we could go all the way there, and then grew up in Idaho? Is that
right? Yeah, I grew up in Idaho.
How is that? We don't have to tell the whole story, but I mean, from like what age to when did what like was your upbringing in Idaho?
So basically, my sisters and I grew up there, and I went there, I would say, full time probably from about kindergarten to fifth grade. And it's amazing. It's probably one of the most beautiful places ever. And the winters are incredible because it's just perfect snow, and I grew up in a kind of small little ski town, and then in the summer it's incredible. I remember some of my favorite times is they do a whole rodeo and a parade on July 4th, and it's awesome. It's like so small town, just
Americana.
It's just the opposite of what I would have thought. You know,
completely.
I thought you grown up in Hollywood and all of that, but
are there a lot of transplants from the Hollywood realm who live there, or was it legitimately you guys were the oddballs growing up in this small town?
No, I think a lot of people kind of went there more so to vacation. I think that you know, during the winter seasons it gets really busy and people come out to ski.
Yeah,
but I was traveling. You know, I would go. We would go and travel with my parents when they were on set. So we would spend, you know, maybe 2 or 3 months in school there and then go on set with them and do our school work with a tutor and do all that. So it was cool. You know, I had a very kind of random upbringing, but I got to see and experience so many awesome places and meet so many cool people. And it's one of those things that I really appreciate, because I know that it's a very random and probably not necessarily normal, but traditional kind of way of growing up. But it was amazing. I feel like I'm so grateful and lucky to have been able to have traveled so many places and seen so many cool things.
So inspiring.
But did it have any negative ramifications? Because that can kind of cut either way for people. That like uprooting, making new friends.
I'm very bad at basic math.
Yeah.
Okay. I still have to count on my hands sometimes.
Math is afraid that that's fine.
But there's just like little things, you know, that you kind of miss in class like that. And I would say I definitely found that I had a tendency to have my friends be more adult and older than me when I was growing up, because I think I was just around more adults than kids my age. And I think, you know, kind of through that, I had a really hard time kind of connecting with my peers and figuring out, you know, what the kind of way or how to be cool, I guess, if you can put it that way. Uh-huh. I guess that's, you know, part of why I think some of the stuff that I talk about in the show at Carlisle is, you know, I was joking in the show the other night that I feel like nowadays you have to have a rule book for dating of, you know, how to kind of play the games and do all this. And I feel like maybe I just kind of missed, that was one of the kind of lessons that I missed.
I don't know who gets it. I think it's just always going to be a tricky, impossible thing. Yeah, I mean, that resonated so much. It was a very honest and sort of like very vulnerable, like ways of putting yourself out there, but it was so relatable and so real. And like, and all of the music you chose really complemented those very, very just relatable things. So yeah, no, that's not a,
it's a tough room to be that honest in, yeah, also. Right. Cause it's a mixed group. Tends to be older, although I don't know if it was at your show, but
it's been a mix the past three shows. But
that's nice.
That's why I kind of, even without thinking, you know, when I was putting the set list together, and I kind of realized talking to the musical director James that it kind of was about love, and that was kind of the thesis statement that I kind of realized was what it was about. Because, you know, I thought regardless of where you've come from and whether or not you've grown up like me or wherever you're from, and that it's something that everybody struggles with. And I feel like especially now in this generation where everything is so instantaneous and everything is, you know, our attention span is so short and there's so many different ways to connect with people that it's really hard, I feel like, to have genuine human connection and actually take the time to go, all right, let me actually spend the time to get to know you. Let me find out who you are before I make a choice whether or not I like you or not, or whether or not, you know, I'm going to go home with you. You know what I mean? I feel like now it's like people get about 5 seconds and you kind of have to present yourself and go, all right, here I am. And if, you know, that doesn't work, then it's kind of, you're thrown out with trash.
And then on top of that, you're someone who's very Googleable. So that adds a whole another layer to it. I mean,
which is why I was, it's a good move to just refrain when you can and just
make up, just
take the time. You're going to meet somebody you don't like necessarily, Google them like right away, which is hard for our generation. I mean,
you get an image then of not necessarily who they are, but of what the media has kind of created. Yeah. Whether or not it's, you know, stories that are told about you or whatever it is. And it's unfortunately kind of one of those things where you don't really have control over it always. And then if you try and defend it or kind of, you know, go out against it and say, actually, that's not the case, then it ends up looking even worse.
Losing battle.
Yeah, man. You can't win that way.
No.
But do you feel like you've been preparing or just sort of in the spotlight in a way for so many years that now that it's sort of about your career that you're prepared, or that you've, that somehow that gives you an advantage, or do you just look at it and say, it's always going to be what it is? Or
it's a mix, you know, because I think for me, what I got frustrated with when I was, I would say maybe anywhere from like 16 to 20, and I was getting a little bit older, and people, you know, I would have paparazzi come and take photos of me. And, you know, when I was 18 and I started working a little bit, say on either like independent movies or doing random television shows here and there, nothing huge that, you know, everybody would know. Mm-hmm. I was a little bit frustrated because I felt like I was getting so much more attention than what I had earned from the work that I had done, if that makes sense. And so then, of course, to the outside world, it looks like, why, who cares? Like, why is this girl getting attention? She's not doing anything. She's, you know, she's just the famous kid of somebody.
Right.
So there was that aspect of it. But then also, I feel like that whole world and media and kind of the whole paparazzi realm has really actually changed even since I was a little kid. I mean, I remember, you know, people would come and try and take photographs of me and my family when we would go out. But it was always much more from an observational, there was still a certain level of kind of respect.
There's a little distance.
Yeah. And just a level of kind of human decency of going, okay, you know, these are your children. We're not going to invade your privacy or even, you know, try to engage you or get a reaction out of you. And I feel like nowadays it's just turned into this thing where, you know, it's become where they're involved and they actually want to egg you on. They want to get a reaction and they want to see you
with their phone in your face. Right.
They want to watch you fall down the stairs or get out of a car and have your underwear show. And I just, to me, I find that to be a little bit aggressive and invasive. I think I completely understand if you have made a choice to be in this line of work and in the public eye that that comes with a certain level of scrutiny. Mm-hmm. But I think that there should just be a kind of standard for respect of, you know, this is whether it's, you know, this is my home, or there should just be certain boundaries. If I'm at work or I'm out, that's one thing. But if I'm at my house or I'm doing something that's not, you know,
human decency.
Exactly. And, and unfortunately, that's just not really around anymore. But, you know, it is what it is. And you, I think you can either make a choice to let that really cripple and define you and not really want to go out, or you can just go, you know, it is what it is. And it's all good.
How do you make that decision? Sometimes I think about how crippling that would be for me. I would just be paranoid all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you just have to push it out.
I mean, it sucks. You know, I can't walk out on the street in my pajamas anymore, but, you know,
there are bigger hardships
as far as it goes.
Like there's just a certain level then, I think, of a heightened awareness of how you, say, present yourself. But there's also sometimes no control. You know, this article came out about me the other day that my friend sent me that I was laughing so hard in it. The headline was like, "Rumor, broken lonely, how she's lost her $4 million fortune." And I posted it on my Instagram because I just was laughing at it so hard.
Right, owning it.
Yeah.
Like appropriation.
I was like, listen, if I had known that I had $4 million that I had spent, I would have been more than happy to waste it and, you know, lose it. And they were like, she's just been partying and shopping and going on all these vacations. And
you're like, I wish.
I was like, yeah, I wish. I've been working pretty much every day for the last year and a half. And if I had had time to actually do all that, that would have been awesome. I would have loved that. But, you know, it's just crazy.
The slow news days.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mind, you know, if they're going to kind of go off something that's truth and twist it a little bit. But I'm like, wow, there really must not be going on a lot in the world if y'all can just figure out a way that's the news story of the day.
I mean, has it come and gone for you in waves, the media attention throughout your life? Like, as your parents are more or less in the news, then does that tend to, like, throw the spotlight back on you?
There's definitely times, I think, when it gets a little bit crazier. I remember, you know, there have been certain times where they've literally been camped outside my house every day.
Yeah.
To the point where, you know, I'm sitting there, I'm buying groceries, you guys. Like, I'm not doing anything.
She's just like us. So,
what's in your grocery bag?
Exactly. And that can be a little bit invasive. You know, I think, again, it's just there's a certain level of kind of invasion and a lack of respect because, again, people want to know. They want, you know, the story. They want to see, you know, if you're going to be breaking down crying at the grocery store or buying gas or whatever it is. And it's just, it's a lie. But,
you know. I mean, and now in my head I'm hearing people be like, oh, boo-hoo, poor famous people. But of the course. Point is, like, I don't think from the little I know about you in your life, you didn't set out to be famous. You were born to a certain family and now you're pursuing your art and your career, which is putting you back in a spotlight. But it's not your intention. You're not like a socialite whose aim in life was to become famous, in which case I would maybe feel a little less bad. But the things that you're genuinely doing in your life are bringing you attention.
Right, which is cool. The first introduction for me was the Carlisle, which is such a, you really have to work and hone and a craft and be talented at it and have a really like a vision. I mean, and it's not to say that all the other things that we'll talk about all the other stuff too, but it's like from that vantage point, you are a hard worker and you like have a vision of it. So to be now, I'm saying like to be in the spotlight and in the media for that, it's probably a new sort of fun or.
Oh, most definitely.
I mean, this year has like been a crazy, 2015 was like the year, which
it
is
really
just
was.
Like amazing.
And it's interesting, you know, like, and I in no way, you know, kind of want to, you know, kind of put down media in a certain sense because I found even so, especially after being on Dancing with the Stars, I love having, you know, outlets like, say, Twitter or Instagram to be able to connect with my fans because that's what I like. I think that's
the blessing of it.
That's because I want to be able to reach out to people. I want to be those people that, you know, are saying, oh, boohoo, poor little rich girl, whatever it is. I want to be like, hey, listen, you know what? If you give me 5 minutes and I can get to know you and we can have a conversation or whatever, and I can show you who I am. And then if you still don't like me, you know
that's
what?
Fair.
Right.
All good.
Right.
Like, yeah. Do you, whatever it is. But I think that was one of the coolest things about being on Dancing with the Stars was just having a platform to be able to show people and have my voice and mm-hmm. my kind of perspective be heard for the first time and really give people an opportunity to know who I am and where I'm coming from that was in a way that was completely unbiased and without, you know, someone else looking in
yeah.
and their opinion on it. So
did you watch that show before you were on it?
A little bit back and forth, but uh-huh. I wasn't ever a hardcore kind of diehard fan of it.
Yeah.
And I went to a live taping and I just kind of was blown away by what everybody did. And so they ended up actually asking me that next season to kind of be on it. And I was so gung ho for it. I was all about it. And now I'm such a huge fan of the show. Now yeah. I try and go whenever I can.
Yeah.
Were you sure. a dancer before? Like, I mean, clearly you're... Please.
Literally not at all.
No.
I mean, I could move and I have rhythm.
This is the time you feel really bad about yourself.
No, yes. Because holy crap. So I'm just going to go back a little further.
Yeah.
You had gone to Interlaken, is that right?
Yeah.
Which is that just strictly music or is it?
No, it's like a mini Juilliard, I would say. They have everything from writing majors to visual arts to then theater and dance and all of that. And the first year I went there, I was... an opera major. And then the year after that, I did theater. And then I came back to school in LA.
So how old were you at that time when you were doing that?
I was 14. I was the only freshman opera major.
Wow.
I was terrified.
Why opera? Yeah, where did that come into your life?
You know, when I was growing up in Idaho, I was a part of a music conservatory. And, you know, when you're growing up in a small town like that, there are very kind of few and limited options in terms of creative outlets. And you know, what I'd always been told is if you really want to be a singer and work on all of that, then you should be classically trained. And that's really how to kind of hone your skills. And so I, you know, just thought, okay, why not? I'll try this. And mm-hmm. it's definitely not necessarily the music that I would want to sing all the time now, but I feel like that's definitely helped in just in terms of...
It's the best training. I
mean, yeah.
It's classical 100%, training.
Yeah. Exactly.
And what were you listening to at that time as a kid or what was inspiring to you?
You know, I have to say, my musical taste, I think, comes completely from my dad. And he has such a cool kind of eclectic taste of music. I was always listening to a lot of jazz and really kind of, I'd say, random versions of like the Coasters. And I would listen to all kind of like the Beatles, the Stones, all of that old school rock. But then, you know, really cool, funky Motown and a lot of cool blues and I really fell in love. I think I have a kind of soft spot for a lot of music with horns. Like when someone just can
wail.
Yeah, it's just awesome. Yeah. I love it. I get so excited.
Did anyone else in your family play music when you were growing up? Were people playing in the house at all?
No, I mean, my dad plays harmonica.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really well, actually.
That's very impressive when someone can really play harmonica.
It's awesome.
It's harder than you think.
It's very hard. I know, it's so random. But I remember seeing him, you know, play shows. And so I was always kind of surrounded by music. And my mom definitely had a lot of music, kind of fun stuff, too. But it was just because I think from when we were so little, my sisters and I were all such kind of... performers. We would always, you know, put on shows in the living room and make everybody sit down and pay us a dollar to watch the show.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Smart.
Yeah,
young entrepreneurs.
Right. Exactly. Trying to work it out.
Uh-huh.
So I think that...
So it was like a musical theater vibe at that time?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we would just sing whatever songs maybe that my dad had done. You know, we, Scout and Tallulah and I used to do Smokey Joe's Cafe all the time. And I think that they were just such huge supporters of really kind of letting that part of our personalities flourish. So it was cool. I always felt really supported in my family to really go after, you know, kind of my creative outlets that I wanted to.
Mm-hmm. And did you see yourself as a music person foremost or just all around performer? Like, how do you see yourself in that way?
You know, I don't know. I feel like it's really changed now, at least. I used to always kind of, I've always loved singing, and mm-hmm. I think that that's probably the thing that I most naturally drift towards. But I never, when I was growing up, I didn't really know exactly how I wanted to put myself out there mm-hmm. in that sense. You know, I didn't know if the kind of classic making a record, going on tour, doing that whole thing was necessarily right for me. And so I think also because in a certain way, I've always kind of held it so precious and I really wanted to put it out there in the right way, because I do know that it comes with an extra set of scrutiny, because mm-hmm. when, you know, people try and flip-flop and say, I'm an actor, I'm a singer, that they're right. just on top of already, you know, a bunch of stuff. They yeah. kind of tend to get a little bit more scrutiny that way. Mm-hmm. So I think I've constantly been trying to figure that out. But, you know, in the future, I feel like I want to find a way to really incorporate even dance now. I really fell in love with it last year. And if I could find, you know, a kind of perfect job that covers right. all of that.
I think it's happening.
But
so singing, so you were taking voice lessons and that was clearly yeah. like you understood that about your performance. And then you sort of veered away from opera at a certain point. And then
I went to, I left school. I left the boarding school and then I came to school in LA because my family had moved out here, out to LA. And I graduated and I went to college at USC for about a semester and I just didn't really feel like it was for me. I felt really like there wasn't a lot of creative things that I wanted to do. And so I asked my mom, I said, all right, well, what if I kind of create my own college? I said, I don't want to, I'm not asking to just quit school and sit at the house all day and do nothing. You know, I want to actually do stuff. So I left and I started taking piano and voice lessons twice cool. a week. And I worked at Marc Jacobs as a,
really?
Yeah.
Cool.
And then I...
Like in their office or in a store?
Oh no, in the store.
Really?
I was selling clothes. Oh yeah. Because I needed to make my own money, you know?
And were you pretty anonymous doing that?
No, I think people kind of would come in.
Shock
and
some
like,
customers.
Like, do I
working?
Know you? Okay. But I had a great time. And I think that was, it was really important for me to be able to make my own money and, mm-hmm. and be independent, because I didn't want to get stuck in that kind of grind of just not doing anything with my life and kind of being yeah. okay with status quo and finding that kind of drive to and motivation. So I was doing that, and then I was also auditioning the time for movies and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Was it classical voice or more like jazz lessons you were taking at that time?
It was more just kind of technique and you know, generally we weren't necessarily always singing stuff, but just really working on, you know, you usually in a voice lesson, unless there's like a specific song I would say that you want to work on, it's usually just about kind of warming your voice up and, sure. and learning how to do that and kind of hearing different placement of things. And so I was doing that. And then I ended up, I got a, you know, small part in this independent film. And from there, I kind of just started working a little bit more as an actor and on and off and doing stuff like that. And
so how was that grind for you? The auditioning and the...
It's tough.
Yeah.
It's definitely tough and you really have to want it. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things that it's definitely not something for the lighthearted, because you go in there and if you don't get a part, then you immediately feel like it's about you.
Yeah.
And it took me at least a very long time to realize that it really has actually nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
They could have,
a million factors.
Yeah. There's mm-hmm. so many things. I mean, you could literally look like one of the executive producer's ex-wives right. and then right. they're like, oh no, definitely not that girl. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Right. So, or they already cast a brunette so they can't have
exactly.
two brunettes.
Or you're too tall
you're too
for
tall,
the guy
you're
that
too short.
Yeah, whatever
exactly.
it yeah. is. So, but acting is definitely something that you really have to want, especially just because there's so many talented people mm-hmm. and it's just fun. You know, I love doing it and I feel so grateful that I've had so many opportunities to actually do that. And, you know, I'm working this year on hoping to find more projects like that and fun things that challenge me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then at some point you start putting together a show for the Sayers Club. Sayers Club?
Yeah, the Sayers Club. I just wanted
Good job, New Yorker.
Thanks, I got it.
I just wanted to find more outlets to sing. I had felt, you know, like I was really missing that piece. And I had a couple friends that, you know, were in the band there and played. And so they have a night where it's not really like an open mic night, but they have people come up and have a bunch of different singers. And one night they just kind of said, hey, do you want to sing something? And I was like, okay, all right, well, I'll try it out. And I did. And I had a great time. It was a great, you know, kind of vibe. And
is that the first time you were performing live?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was cool. I loved it. And it was the band was amazing and they really kind of understood the kind of music that I wanted to play. And so I started getting up and would do maybe two or three songs on a different night that they did. And then eventually I just said, hey, you know, I'd love to put on a show that's a bit more of a different vibe, that's kind of more jazzy, and could we put this on a particular night? And mm-hmm. so I kind of had a standing kind of spot so every cool. week, and it was awesome.
And having that standing spot, I mean, like it takes, what do they say, 10,000 hours of practice. So it's like, and like how many hours of being on stage to get comfortable? So having that show, was it weekly or monthly or something? Or
it was every week.
I mean, that's just the best. Just like,
it was great. And I feel like that really helped me understand a little bit more about kind of having stage presence and really connecting with the audience, because you can get lost behind the microphone, very much so, and really kind of get nervous and in your own world that way. And when you're in a bigger arena or a bigger stage, I think it's easier to be a little bit quieter. But especially, you know, in a place like Carlisle, where you literally have people who are
in your face,
right up in your face.
Yeah.
It's really intimate, and it's very kind of, I mean, it's a very kind of naked stage, I would say. You know, you really have to.
You can hear the knives scraping
right.
the plates.
Yeah. You know? Well, I was going to ask you what of the sort of venues that you've played now, Broadway, theater, Dancing with the Stars, national television, and Carlisle. I have a guess of which one would be, which sounds the most intimidating to me, but which one
like
of those
you should write
has
it down
the,
and then we'll compare.
Yeah. Like which to you feels the most like nerve wracking kind of performance? They're so different.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely
when
different.
Are you the most scared?
Yeah. Well,
I think that doing something like the Carlisle is definitely the most intimidating because there's not the sequins. You're not dancing. You're really, I think to have a successful show at a place like that, you really have to share a part of yourself with the audience, and you really have to allow yourself to be vulnerable, which can be very difficult, and be willing to kind of have the faith that you're sitting with an audience that is going to be receptive to that and mm-hmm. wants to see that part of you, because you can go play a show and maybe people aren't going to pay attention and maybe people won't like what you're doing or whatever it is. So you have to really be open to whatever they're going to give back to you. But I have to say, of the three shows so far, I've been so unbelievably and pleasantly surprised by the warmth and the attentiveness and the reception of the audience, because you can really tell mm-hmm. that they're so engaged and they want to be a part of the story that you're telling. They want to hear what you have to say. And you guys are right. The audience can be varied. I don't know, you know, I didn't know if the things that I had to say would necessarily connect with people, or that they would, you know, kind of like that, the things that I had to say, but they were, and it was awesome. And the things that I thought maybe hit one type of audience ended up hitting a much kind of broader scope than I thought. So it was cool.
It reminds me of doing stand-up, or like what I've heard of doing stand-up, you know, like the audience could just turn on you at some point on a given night, or like your songs don't land, like your jokes wouldn't land, and you just know it, and you just got to get through the night and on to the next gig. Yeah. So I'm glad that hasn't happened yet, knock on wood.
Yeah, exactly. So far I've been lucky.
But it's a funny kind of run, because it's so short. I mean, it's something that you put so much heart and soul into, and then it's so short and then it's over. I bet you wonder like, oh, I could keep doing this. Or are you like, whew, glad that's over.
Come back.
Yeah.
I mean, I think because, you know, I'd done 54 Below last year and that was my first kind of entrance into the cabaret kind of scene. So to then, and I did that tie and I did the show together. And so it's a lot different when you have someone else to kind of banter back and forth with. Yeah. But
tell us about Ty for a second, because I know there's a lot of misinformation about him.
I know.
Which is amazing.
Ty is my roommate and I would say probably my life partner and my gay husband. Mm. And he's quite a few times been mistaken as my boyfriend. So obviously there's been a few mistakes of fact checking occasionally, but you know, it's okay. Couldn't think of anybody better.
And you met doing For the Record?
Yeah. He was helping out with the show and we just became friends and his lease was up at the place that he was staying. And so then I have 5 dogs. And
oh, man.
Whoa. which is quite a bit. And I was working a lot more and he needed a place to kind of move. And I thought, oh, you know, I have a room. And if you wouldn't mind kind of helping me out with the dogs occasionally and we can kind of basically play house if you want.
It's a dream.
Awesome. Totally the dream. And now he works with you in all ways. You guys were working together.
Yeah. I mean, he came out here with me when I was doing Chicago and really helped me out because I was not prepared for that kind of rigorous schedule. And then when I got back to LA, he has been directing and working on the shows at the Rockwell. And then I told him that I was doing this show and I said, listen, this is such a weird new world for me. Could you, you know, kind of come and help me out? And he's incredible. He's a champion. There's no way that I would have been able to throw this show together without him.
Yeah.
And on top of that, he's an insane singer and so incredibly talented. And
right.
And
you guys
awesome
did class
person.
Together. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's awesome.
From Chicago.
Yeah. Let's talk about Chicago because I'm surprised that you didn't say that was the most intimidating place to perform
not
so far.
All. Oddly.
Like
I think
so
I would
nervous.
Have thought of the three, Dancing with the Stars, Broadway, and Tiny Cabaret Room, I would have...
It'd be Broadway.
No, I would have thought Broadway least.
Really?
As well, because you're so supported by other people.
Yeah.
It's a machine that runs... Not that it's not incredibly intimidating,
no, but
of course.
It's been around.
You're not alone in any way. Even where Dancing with the Stars, first of all, you're on television. Second of all, you're doing something that's live.
It's two
Broadway
of you.
Broadway is live, guys. Broadway is live. But it's not television.
Right.
And I don't know. I mean...
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know. Broadway...
You're a professional. I don't know. I feel like I barely breathe when I watch a Broadway show because I'm so nervous. Yeah. It's like, it's so impressive to me that they can pull that off without a hitch usually night after night. It's like a miracle to me.
I'm not a Dancing with the Stars person, but I've been watching some clips and like... That looks terrifying, especially knowing
scary.
That you weren't a dancer, which I really need to get back to because I kind of don't believe it because it's like the dance moves that you were doing. And then we can talk about Chicago more. But how did that happen? If you weren't a dancer, you weren't known as a dancer, you went to a live taping and they're just like, oh, like you
well,
seem like
asked,
the perfect.
They had asked me to do it a couple of years before. And
is there any criteria as far as like
no.
ability? No,
not at all. And they'd asked me to do a couple of years before.
But you can't be horrible or it would be
well, you
terrible
probably go
for
in
the
and
show,
show,
right?
Right, they would
oh, no, they don't audition
you
at all.
It's just leap of faith?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Well, that's why they have the pros, though. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that's what I think is part of what makes them so incredible because not only are they teaching you, uh-huh. they're your partner, and they're choreographing every dance that you do.
Wow.
So are they so good that even if you were terrible, they would make you passable on that show? Like, I don't think it would work for me.
I would not.
You know, I think when you're going into a show like that, I think it really depends on what you want to get out of it.
Yeah.
And I'll
what
I'll
did
you
want to
where
go?
Were you
so
at the time,
the thing.
Like, in your life? So like, tell us a little story.
I've taken a few ballet classes. I think I've maybe taken one hip-hop class, and I think the ballet class
is that what you were hoping to hear? like, I knew
but,
it.
But when I say, I took one hip-hop class, I mean I went to one... hip hop class, not like I took it
like
for a while.
60 minutes. Of
yeah,
my
60
life.
Minutes. That was it.
Okay, but you're like you dance, like you go. I mean, not.
I mean, I go
you're
out.
Not a classical
know.
Dancer, but you move. You like go to
you
the.
Got
you go out. You
yeah,
got
if I went out, like I know how to shake a little bit. But the show that we were doing, actually, the For the Record show, one of Baz Luhrmann's films, Strictly Ballroom, is about ballroom dancing.
That's right.
So, I did maybe a few moves, and nothing compared to what I did on the show, but. that's kind of where I got a little bit interested, because I mean, I was crap, by the way. Like, I did not dance. My, you know, I would like shake a little bit, maybe.
In
the For the Record show.
Crap is not accurate. I saw it. It's not accurate. but that's, you know, very humble of you to say.
It's very different and not at all on the same level. And so I just kind of wanted to learn how to dance a little bit more. And so when I went into the show, I said, okay, well, I want to dance. If nothing else, that's what I want to get out of this experience.
Boot camp.
Yeah, and I was willing to, you know, work my ass off for all intents and purposes. You know, I wanted to be there. I wanted to win. I wanted to do everything that I possibly could to become the best dancer I could. Because
Do they give you a schedule, or is it up to you how many hours you want to put in, or like how does it?
It kind of depends. I mean, you do everywhere anything from like 4 to 6 hours a day.
Okay.
And then sometimes more towards the end, you know, when you're learning 2 dances in a week, because you basically, you do the live show on Monday and then you have Tuesday to kind of learn, maybe listen to the song that you're doing for next week and maybe do a few moves, and then your pro, it's kind of choreographing on Tuesday night. And then Wednesday, Thursday, you are learning the dance. And then by Friday, you have to tape what's called a wide, so that, you know, you have to have your whole dance done basically by Friday, so that they can see what they need to film for the live show. And then on Saturday, you are tweaking. And then Sunday, you have camera blocking. And then Monday,
and dress rehearsal in the shoes. And the
then before you do, when you get there on Monday, you get there maybe at like 6 a.m. and you do dress rehearsal, or you do a blocking rehearsal, then dress rehearsal, and then the live show.
One dress rehearsal.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
And how many weeks?
It's 3 months.
Wow. Insane. So you can see your progress as a dancer. Oh, I mean, all of a sudden, like, you're not a dancer, and now you're a dancer. Now you're a straight up dancer.
But now what do you do with it? Well, like, you got all your skills.
Exactly. I'm trying to find more ways.
So was Broadway brought to you during that time on the show?
Yeah. I mean, Chicago was one of the first shows I ever saw on Broadway. And so I was desperate to always be in it. And I had reached out, I think, a couple times before. And, you know, I don't think that they thought I was necessarily old enough or whatever it was. And then while I was doing, after I did Dancing with the Stars, they kind of reached out and said, hey, you know, we'd love to have her. And I went in and did it. And I think maybe the reason it wasn't so scary for me is, to a certain extent, like you said, it's a show that has been running so long that there really is a kind of built-in audience. And then on top of that, the amazing outpouring of support I got when I was doing Dancing with the Stars. I mean, I have the most incredible fans in the world. They are so amazing. I had a girl named Dani Ace who literally last night came to see my show and was on a bus for a day and a half from Houston just to come and see the show.
Oh my God. Whoa. What else is that?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Amazing. Just like these girls are so amazing and so incredible. And to just hear how much me talking about my story and what I went through and how much that affected them and helped them was so cool.
How did you connect with her? Did she reach out to you? Like, how did she break through the so
I talked to a lot of them on Twitter.
You do?
Yeah.
And like you'll talk back.
We'll either tweet back or, you know, kind of message each other or whatever it is. And
he'll take that time.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, they do so much. I have so much incredible fan art too, like that they've painted or made. And I mean, this whole time I've been doing the show out here, they're posting every day about people, you know, come see the show. Aww. And everything. And it's amazing. It's incredible. Amazing. You know, so I've been so lucky that way to have a group of people that are so supportive. And so by the time I went and did Chicago, I guess it wasn't that daunting to me because I've already sang a bunch. I've already, you know, I've done the acting and the dancing stuff was, you know, definitely not as crazy or complicated as doing the show. So by that time.
But never singing and dancing at the same time. Was that a feat?
Yes and no. I mean, the dancing that you, because I think that they've had so many different people do the show, they really build it around your kind of comfort zone. And
the
what
choreography
you
can change.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's the same and a staple, but you know, some parts might be a little bit more dancey, but in general, the music isn't something that's so out of the range. You know, it's not like I'm trying to sing Defying Gravity every night, right? And trying to do, you know,
it's
a tango
lot. It's
number.
Wordy and it's, you know, it's a lot and it's storytelling. The moves are.
But awesome. I mean, I did a lot of musical theater when I was a kid at summer camps and stuff like that. So okay. I guess I don't know why it just it. By the time I was like, this is cool. I got this. All right.
Okay, if you've done musical theater, then yeah, you've done it. Okay.
Yeah, but in school.
No, and but in Broadway. No, I mean, I'm asking it as if like singing and dancing together hard. No, it's like you. That's what.
But did you have to get vocally trained in a different way for Broadway?
I think the only thing for me that was different is just about being loud and not acting for, you know, say like a close up or for a camera. You really have to project a little bit more, especially when you're speaking.
Yeah.
So that was, I would say, probably the only thing that was a little tricky. But even also like singing and dancing, I did that a bunch in the For the Record shows.
Right.
So by that time, you know, and we don't really have a chorus. So yeah, again,
right. Even
all of the preparing events, I would say, of the past 2 years, I think really helped me kind of prepare for what's gone down this year. So I've been really lucky in that way. You know, everything's kind of fell into place in a way that has really set me up to kind of do all this. So
yeah. Cool. And how have you handled it emotionally? Has it been pretty even for you? Sounds like a lot of stuff to bounce between.
I was, by the time I was done with Chicago, I was exhausted.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I had stopped working since, because I started rehearsals for Dancing with the Stars almost a year ago. Maybe I think I started around February. Mm-hmm. And so from February to November, I basically had maybe a week off. And in between that, I had a foot injury. I had two really bad stress fractures on my foot. Oof. That
from what?
Just from dancing a lot. And I think I just probably wasn't taking good enough care of myself and sleeping enough. Because right after I did the show, I went and I did the Dancing with the Stars tour.
Uh-huh.
And then I did Sway Show, which is a show that Val, my partner, put on with his family and their kind of dance team. And so then I went straight from that. And then I think I had like a 3-day trip to China in between, and then was flying back with a hurt foot and going into rehearsals for Chicago with my foot still in a boot.
Wow.
And, you know, so it was a lot. but I have to say, I don't think I've ever been happier than when I'm working. I think my personality is one that does much better when I have stuff
going
on.
Need to be productive.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I'm really good at chilling on the couch and binge watching, you know, amazing Netflix shows or whatever.
In between, right.
Yeah, you know, so when I do get those chances, I love it. But I'm so grateful to have work. You know, I would rather be working and be so tired because I'm working than be frustrated because I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
So
when you go back to LA, are you going to chill out for a little bit? No,
probably not.
Yeah.
I'm flying back, I think this week, and then I'm starting rehearsals to go into Devil Wears Prada, and then I have a couple other things going on, so it's kind of nonstop. Yeah.
You shot Hello Again?
Yeah. Oh, right. I did that too.
Is that done?
I did that right after Chicago.
Which is funny. I heard that. I thought of the Shelley Long movie.
I know.
Movie.
I did too. I was like, I hope it's a.
Oh my God. Which I don't. I feel like nobody knows that movie. I'm surprised you do. But it's not that. It's about. It's
That'd
all.
Be awesome,
it's, it's like all these different love stories.
Yeah.
And it's from the 1800s
all the way to present day.
Okay, and then. You just shot that as a film, so that's cool.
Yeah, it was cool. It's the first musical movie I've ever done, which is definitely weird. It's a little bit crazy.
Because you're recording everything.
Yeah, you record everything in the studio, but, you know, they really wanted to have a lot of us singing live for it. So there is a lot of just, you know, live singing, and you have a little, like, earwig in your ear, and you're like, what is happening?
Crazy.
Okay, here we go.
But there aren't many of those anymore, so.
I know.
It's exciting.
I love it.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
It's so fun. And I saw a teaser for it the other day, and it looks absolutely stunning.
Yeah?
I mean.
Is there a release date?
I'm not entirely sure of that yet. I should find out, and I'll let you guys know.
But
just everything from the music to the cast that they put together, and some of the cinematography is, and the set design is just, it looks stunning. So I'm really excited to see how it turned out.
Yeah.
So fun.
Are you a musical theater nerd in general?
A little bit. I feel like I can't quite call myself that because okay. I feel like the true and genuine musical theater nerds would probably
be offended.
You have my head for it. But thankfully, Ty's, you know, been educating me uh-huh. quite a bit. We actually went and saw Shuffle Along the other night. Mm. And the
Is that with Audra McDonald?
Yeah. And the Tonys on that stage alone, I mean, I was I was crying like half the show and just kept looking over to him with my mouth basically on the ground, just like tears coming out of my eyes, just going, what is happening? How is this happening? This is so amazing. Oh my God.
Cool.
So it's hard. Like I was out here for 4 months when I was doing Chicago, and I think I got to see maybe 2 other shows. And
oh yeah. When
you're on
deal.
Yeah, when you're on a schedule like that. So
I mean, how did that schedule compare to the Dancing with the Stars? I mean, that's a they're both nonstop.
Was yeah.
It, I mean, more exhausting or more physically?
It's different. Yes and no. I think, you know, I was much more physically active for more hours probably doing Dancing with the Stars and learning a new skill. But in terms of the schedule of performing, I would say the hardest part isn't necessarily physically on your body. I got used to working out that much and dancing and, you know, the acting stuff. But I think singing 8 shows a week is difficult because if you're tired, you can act. If you're
if you have
sleepy,
a headache,
if you have a headache, you can dance. You right. can make it work.
Yeah.
You know, you just get out there and you push through. But if you're singing and your voice goes, there's nothing to be done. You know, I had a sinus infection twice during the show, and I had to call out for, I think, maybe 2 shows, and I felt
That's
terrible.
It?
Yeah, but I felt awful because people, you know, people were crazy upset, and I was like, listen, if I could speak right now, I went to my you know, my voice coach and everything. I couldn't even, my vocal cords, like, wouldn't even touch to make sound.
Man.
So
it must have been scary.
It was just frustrating because, you know, it's one of those things, is, again, it's like you have no control over it.
I always wonder, like, when a person gets into that situation of a Broadway show 8 shows a week, like, is there someone, like, there should be someone, like, assigned to you, like, I will protect your voice, like, you should only, like, you should speak this much and drink this and take this,
just,
and
like, put them in a bubble.
Like,
but
right,
that's what they,
like,
do, the people that, you know, have it as kind of lifetime careers, because that's what I think makes it so exhausting and so hard, because when you have the whole day before the show, it's not like you can go and be talking or screaming or running around. And if you do have a night off, it's not like you can go out and be out. And I mean, even if you drink, it's not even, if you're out talking even loudly anywhere.
Yeah.
Right.
Not That's what our first guest on the show, Susan Tedeschi, was telling us. She was like, you can stay up all night drinking, but then you need to go to bed and sleep. Like, you can literally do anything, but you need to sleep
or you
won't have a voice.
And it also depends on what kind of sound you want to come out the next day.
True.
If you're doing Broadway.
Well, yeah.
People are expecting you to sound.
The blues.
Right.
Maybe. Yeah.
But then the songs that you get to sing as Roxy is like, oh my God.
It's really fun.
That's a great show. It's so fun.
Well, now I'm feeling guilty that you're talking so much before you have 2 shows.
2 shows tonight.
Yep.
Oh, wow. Is this the last night?
Yep.
Grand finale. Oh,
thank you for being here.
Of course.
Yeah, seriously. Okay. So you're working on the new album. So we will look for that in the coming year.
I hope
so. And the movie, and I don't know what else. Who knows?
I mean, if you're in LA and you're around, you can come to the Rockwell and see Devil Wears
That's Prada. Right.
It should be really funny.
When is that?
I have to look at the exact dates, but I think
the time of year.
It's coming up in like the next 2 weeks, I think,
okay.
The end of April.
Perfect.
I think around like the week of April 22nd or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, and who knows? I mean, I feel like there's going to be a lot more. I'm just not entirely sure exactly what's going to happen.
That's a great thing.
That's good. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's why we get up every day.
Right.
Just
exactly.
Find out. All right, cool.
Thank you
Rumor.
So much.
Of course. Thank you guys for having me. This was awesome.
Awesome.
The night sky shall gain, then that's night shall lose. So the Bible says, and it still is new. Mama may hang, and Papa may hang. While the weak ones fade, empty pockets don't ever make the grave. And mama may hide, and papa may hide, but God bless the child that's got his own, that's got his own. Crust of bread and such. You can help yourself, but don't you take too much. Mama may hide, and papa may hide, but God bless the child that's got his own.
Thank you. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.